So for this Monday talk, I begin a new five-part series. And in some ways, it continues from the long series we had on mindfulness of breathing. That mindfulness of breathing, meditation in general, not just mindfulness of breathing, to really kind of settle in and discover the value of meditation, we discover that it's not all about me, myself, and mine. In fact, to be involved in thoughts and ideations of me, myself, and mine limits our ability to settle deeply in meditation, to, in a way, get out of the way for our, to get out of the way of our meditative process, to get out of the way of what feels more and more like a natural process of the Dharma moving through us. And at some point we begin to appreciate that how powerful it is to no longer interfere unnecessarily with the natural process of the Dharma within. And the unnatural ways or the unhealthy ways are to have to be caught up in our thoughts, our preoccupations, to be lost in thought, or to be caught in the what often is the motivating factors for preoccupation. It could be greed, it could be resentment, ill will, it could be doubt, it could be anxiety and fear, it can be conceit. A high percentage of many people's thinking has me, myself, and mine at the center of our thinking, that they somehow that concerns ourselves. And of course we want to make ourselves safe. Of course we want the best for ourselves. And the somewhat paradox is that the less self-preoccupation we have, the more the self, who we are, more happiness and well-being there is for us. And so we begin slowly to learn that there is another way of living that is not centered on self. It might be centered on this body and mind that we have. It isn't that we discount this being that we are, but the ideations, the ideas, the identities we take on of me, myself, and mine, we begin to see that even those of them which are true enough, those which are useful at times, interfere with our deep well-being. And I've often, when I've been in the natural world like I am now, become acutely aware of how some of the preoccupations and concerns I have living in an urban environment seem to just fall away. And it doesn't matter. So many things don't matter so much that I need to get concerned with. Maybe in the urban environment, in the cities, there's much more ongoing concern about how other people think about us, how people think about me. If I spilled my breakfast all over my shirt, I probably wouldn't feel very comfortable walking around my neighborhood. But if I spill on my shirt while I'm camping, it's kind of unfortunate, but there's all kinds of levels of preoccupations I don't have, of me, myself, and mine, what other people are thinking. And rather, I stay in touch with or stay connected to an ease, a peacefulness, an openness, a feeling that's more closely related to the natural world than what we might feel as part of an urban environment, maybe, or a social times. So then, if you're following what I'm saying, then we start feeling there's safety, there is support, there's guidance, there's a profound wisdom in letting go of self-preoccupation, letting go of distractions, letting go of greed and hatred and delusion. And that what results from that letting go is a vitality, is a wisdom, is a safety, is an inspiration that we want to make part of our lives. That this is the center of my life. This is what makes sense. This is how I want to live. I don't want to get swept away again in distractions and greed and fear and all the things that I get caught up in. I want to live with this natural mind, this natural heart that's at ease with itself, that allows to be operate without contraction, without recoiling, and without constantly being for and against everything. And this strong orientation, this strong wish, heartfelt wish, to stay close to this, to make this the center of our lives, for Buddhists is often represented by or expressed through the notion of going for refuge. And it's represented by going for refuge sometimes in the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, where the Buddha, in it, most simply, is the exemplar. And the Dharma is his teachings that arise out of his awakening. And the Sangha are the witnesses who have discovered, who have seen for themselves that what he teaches and what he is the exemplar for is true. So that's one very traditional way of understanding refuge. There are other ways that the Buddha taught about refuge that have to do with other things besides the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha. And there are six things. And one of them that's a big surprise for some people to hear, that oneself becomes one's own refuge in this process. Another is one's actions and choices become a refuge. Another is the Four Noble Truths are a refuge. And the last refuge that the Buddha talks about is refuge in the refuge of a deep letting go of greed, hate, and delusion, an ending of them. So during this week, I would like to talk about refuge. And doing so is, for many people, is a topic of deep faith. Certainly is for me. The ancient tradition Theravadan tradition, the commentators talk about refuge exists in the seat of our emotions, which is said to be the heart, that it's a heartfelt phenomena. It's an element of the heart, this refuge, that it's maybe it has more to do with a feeling, an inspiration, than almost anything else. But it's not only a feeling, it's not only an inspiration, it's not only a religious sentiment, but it's one that is intimately connected to an understanding and wisdom that we get as we do this practice. And that's why the more people practice, the more understanding they have of where true refuge is. Refuge is also very closely connected to our motivations, our sense of purpose. That refuge provides a direction for our lives, a purpose for our lives. It's an orientation. And part of the And having all these things together, a deep faith, a deep heartfeltness, a deep understanding, a deep sense of orientation and purpose that we trust, means that when Buddhists go for a refuge, they often will feel just that idea, reminded of this, there's a trust or a faith and a knowing that they immediately feel like, oh, there's safety. They immediately feel that there is a sense there's a context for our lives of safety. There's an order, there's a lawfulness in this life. There's a natural process that I can trust. And so it's going for refuge is an affirmation, not of a blind faith, not of a blind adherence to a religion, but it's an affirmation of what we're growing into, what's growing and developing within us that we begin understanding and have faith in and have a connection to, that is so meaningful that for some people it becomes the center of their lives. Maybe even they would say it's the most important thing in their lives. But not more important because other important things have become less important. They can, if they really are important, keep them as just as important. But something about the refuge in the Dharma, because it's so heart-based maybe and so beyond and bigger than any kind of self-preoccupation and self-concern, it feels like almost like the world. It feels like we're part of something that's bigger than ourselves that connects us to all the other things that are important to us. In fact, as we become freer as we become more compassionate through practice, then it provides the inner freedom we have and the compassion we have benefits all the other things that we take as important in our life. So to take the Dharma as the most important, actually, I would think improves the quality of our relationships to all the other things that are worthy of keeping important in our lives. And to have it at the center of our lives, the refuge. Sometimes the idea is that refuge is a passive thing. It's not passive. It has to do with how we live our lives and how we engage in the world around us. And and this, they say in Buddhism, is a gem, is a treasure. So that'll be the topic. And this talk here today was kind of an introduction to it. And won't spend so much time on Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha. That'll be a topic for tomorrow. And some of you have heard lots of talks on that. And though I'd love to do a whole series of talks on that, I want to kind of cover these different areas of refuge that the Buddha pointed to as a way of really understanding the full depth and range of something that can be at the heart, can be our heart of our lives. And in doing so, that we become a refuge for others. Not that we are making them to Buddhists, but rather we are a person for whom people feel safe with and inspired with, that there is another way to live that's not based in greed or hatred or based on fear. So thank you. Thank you for allowing me to share this beautiful place that I'm in and the nice coincidence that we're in the natural world for talking about a refuge in the Dharma. I think of the natural world and refuge as being somehow closely connected. So thank you very much, and I look forward to continuing tomorrow. Tomorrow I should be back at IMC.